So just check back with me next week on 30 Minutes.
Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kabu.fm.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kabu.fm/merch to snag some KABU swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KABU's $75,000 goal for our KABU Fights Back campaign now through December 31st.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, before we jump into today's show, here's a reminder that our KBOO membership drive is going on right now. And KBOO, as you know, is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio, made possible by people like you and me. But only 10% of our listeners are actually donors. We have until now relied on $110,000 in grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But since Congress voted to close CPB, those funds will not be available next year. This is difficult and frustrating, but together we can keep the station alive and thriving for years to come. It's been 57 years and counting, but we need your support to continue delivering quality independent programming like the Pathways Show. So please help us reach our $75,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give. And as always, we thank you for your support. Well, today we're going to talk about a quality, a skill that the world can't get too much of, forgiveness. And forgiveness is not a one-size-fits-all practice, so it's not always easy. But without it, we're doomed to repeat our mistakes and remain in a loop of pain and suffering. Our guest defines forgiveness as the conscious decision to value peace of mind and heart over righteousness. Today, we're discussing how we can learn to wipe the slate clean so that we can rise above the limitations of our past. Our guest is Reverend Dr. Michelle Wadley, author of the book, Forgiveness, a Workbook for Emotional and Spiritual Freedom. Michelle is an award-winning author, speaker, coach, retreat maven, and modern mystic whose work blends spiritual psychology, shadow integration, and bold personal transformation. She writes for people who are ready to stop suffering, to know the truth about their lives and claim their spiritual authority. With warmth, humor, and fierce love, Michelle guides readers on a path toward emotional freedom and unshakable authenticity. Her books, Shadow Work, A Spiritual Path to Healing and Integration, and this one, Forgiveness, introduce a fresh take on personal development. She has an upcoming book Dance Like Nobody's Watching, which is focused on authenticity, coming out in June of 2026. Well, hello, Michelle, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Well, thank you. Hello. Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, now, you're a very busy person. I've read your book and your bio and everything, and so I have to ask you, tell us about your decision to produce a workbook on forgiveness.
Oh, my personal story is a little long and complicated, but I'm probably one of the statistics of people, and unfortunately, when you begin to do what I do, you realize that there are actual statistics out there about people who have lived through the kind of life that I have, and I'm talking to about men, mostly women, but women and men who have lived a life where they survived, very dysfunctional families that included, in alcoholism or domestic violence and sexual abuse. And I don't present to you that way now because I've done so much work, but it's because I've done so much work that I can walk in the world being good in my own skin and feeling confident and feeling, that life is good. But I'm here because I climbed out of the hole that was me at a very, at a much younger age. And I teach classes and coaching and all of that. And I am unfortunately very familiar with individuals. They don't only come to me for that, but a great percentage of the people that I work with have this history. And Paul, when I think about it and when I work with them, I want to go to tears, because I know I'm okay, but it just, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. People have had to live through.
Right.
And, so that's why I did it. I did it because I made it to the other side, and I really want to be as much of a hand up to others to make it to the other side also.
I like that expression, comfortable in your own skin. I mean, you seem very comfortable now, but I guess that wasn't always the case.
Oh,
and you tell the story about your childhood and your relationship with your mother, who was an alcoholic or turned into an alcoholic. And you thought you could save her. And I thought it was very ingenious what you were trying to do. I don't know whether you were 10 years old or what.
I was little, yeah. Or younger, yeah.
And so you said, maybe I can help her problem by replacing the vodka with some water. So I thought that was sweet. But then you say that launched me into a career as a counselor and a coach with a desire to help others.
And sometimes as a overcompensating and trying to save where I couldn't, to be honest. I had to learn that balance. You can only save those who want to be saved. And it's not about saving. I don't really mean to use that word, but I can only support those who want to play with me. And that's the way, I don't want to, I've tried the books that I've written. My attempt has been to handle a very complicated, a very serious subject, but with some lightness, because all through both of my books, I beg people, please be gentle with yourself. Please be gentle with yourself, because these are hard subjects.
Part of the problem, part of the challenge, is the way that people are inclined to see themselves as a victim, and that's a kind of a stuck point of view. And you, you bring that up. Being victimized is not always the same as being a victim.
Absolutely. It's a huge distinction that I have to drive into, drive all the time. Because, many of us have been victimized. Many of us have. And it would be a lie and insensitive and cold not to recognize that there's been a lot of damage in the world. And face it, I'm only, this might sound odd, I'm only talking about one little corner of the kind of abusive life where we're not even talking about, homophobia and misogyny and all those other, and racisms and all, we're not talking about that. That's another whole gigantic piece. I'm only talking about people who have within their household, within their homes, and the thing about it is what the reason why I try to sensitize or normalize this conversation too is because, I'm sorry to say, people don't realize it happens in their own home. It happens with cousins. It happens with uncles.
And sometimes people don't recognize that it happened at all. You know, I know in my case, you know, I came from a very difficult family. There was abuse and there was, you know, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse. But I just thought that was normal. I didn't know, you know, that. So I think people waking up to what all that means. But on top of that, there's a much bigger picture, you know, of abuse in society. I mean, corporate abuse, you know, there's just it's something else. And you're actually addressing all of that too. It's sort of like this skill of forgiveness isn't just for the deep personal wounds of a personal one-on-one trauma type of thing.
No, it's right.
Because we're being exploited in so many ways. We're being cheated by the banks and the, you know, it's a really strange world. Dog eat dog.
Yeah.
These days. And you say, this is something that you say that I think we just need, can't be repeated enough. You point out that it's absolutely, totally, ridiculously unreasonable for a person to take blame for having been abused.
Yeah.
And yet that is the tendency.
That's the common reaction.
Yeah. And I think I know why, but I'm going to let you explain it.
Well, and I think, I'm not sure which part of the book you're reading, but it's more the shame, because individuals mistranslate what's happened to them. And as they're maturing, some part of them believes that they could have stopped it or they shouldn't have been available to it. Now, are there cases where that happens? Maybe. But the fact is, most often this happens to people that are not of their own in power yet. Most often it's not people that are in power. And when there's a gigantic imbalance of power. So, for example, a coach and an athlete, while the athlete might even be a young adult, the imbalance of power causes them to acquiesce, you know? And so what happens is often they're in shock, they're in this experience, and then some part of them thinks, wow, how did I let this happen? What did I do? And then the shame just coats them like this ugly stuff. And I use Brené Brown's distinction that guilt is, we feel guilty for doing something, but we feel shame for being a way, particular way.
Right.
And shame is hands down one of the single most destructive ways of being that we really must challenge it. We really must challenge it and heal from it. It's very destructive.
You know, one of the reasons we blame ourselves is because we're 5 years old and we can't imagine that the powers that be that we are completely dependent upon are crazy or conspiring or whatever, or exploiting or whatever they're doing. We can't even imagine that. So it has to be on me.
Yeah.
It has to be something I'm doing. You know, it's amazing how we have this meaning-making compulsion that starts at a very young age, long before the neocortex is developed. And a lot of shame is rooted in those core beliefs that got started way back then.
And you the point you just made, without, I don't know if you purposely made it, but, and this is, you know, I do a lot of study in courses and reading a lot of books, and so I grab pieces of wisdom. But Gabor Mate's the way he couches it is that the thing about trauma is not what happened to you, it's what happened inside of you. Because it's what did I make it mean? And
right,
I spend a lot of time working with my clients and my students to look at what they made it mean, something mean, how they took it on, how they translated it, and to a lot of the world, and I'm sure to therapists, because what you and I are discussing is a more spiritual and metaphysical way of looking at cause and effect, right? And so for me, I'm doing everything I can to convince my students and clients that they can put a new meaning on something. They can retrieve their power. They can see seeing themselves as the victim. They can see subscribing to the stories, and then the quantum world comes in. Because if we're only in the now, then we get to recognize that my suffering, if I'm suffering now, it's because I've dragged what was into this time.
That's right. And we get stuck. We get stuck in these stories. They're very sticky and they stick in our mind, and we have, you know, we don't upgrade them necessarily, particularly if it's something that's got an emotional charge that we basically would rather not have to look at.
Right.
And so we stay stuck in these stories. And that brings up the issue of freedom, which you talk about a lot in your book, how nothing is more important than forgiveness in your quest for freedom.
Yeah.
And your desire for freedom is the strongest motivation that exists.
Yes.
That's a quote from your book. And so this is the motivation for forgiveness. It isn't so much that we have some karmic responsibility to let somebody else off the hook, or, you know, it's about us. It's about something we
do. That might happen. That might happen, but that's not why we do it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And the thing is, it's the motivation, but it's also the reward. It's the reward that it's being able to breathe easy. It's being able to not feel guarded, not walk around, you know, feeling guarded and unsafe. I know, oh my God, I know people that, you know, they can't sit with their back to a door in a restaurant. They, you know, they have to be walked to their car at night. There's fear that like makes their world, that closes them in their world. And then when we heal, what happens is our intuition starts to work for us on our behalf, and we become safer because that we don't have to guard in a way with a lot of effort, that we start to have this dance with the universe. And when I begin to see myself as whole, and I see myself as safe, and I see myself as healed, in this dance, what happens is I'm automatically safe, because only when something really matters, my intuition will come up and I'll go, let's not go there.
Because you have resources.
Yes.
You have tapped into your own power, which is like one of the first points you make in the first section of your book, is how we are imbued with natural healing power.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the divine creative power flowing through us, whatever you want to call it, God or whatever word a person wants to use. We have that, and you really bring that home in the book, and you're helping people. You know, so what is it? Why do people resist forgiveness? It sounds so great.
Well,
you know,
I have a metaphor, an unpleasant metaphor, but I want, this is like a perfect metaphor. And I want, you know, for your listeners, and I know you're in this conversation with me, so you get it. But what happens is I want the listener to imagine, what if one day you just stopped taking the garbage out of your house? Like, instead of taking it out and putting it in the can so it could be removed, you just put stuff in bags and you started stuffing the bags in closets, in the basement, in the attic, until suddenly an odor starts to arrive, arise. But you keep collecting your garbage, and then you get cramped in more in your house like a hoarder. And God bless those people. That's a real issue. But what happens is it happens one little decision at a time. And we think we don't realize that we're functioning on top of this dysfunction. And so what happens when that garbage, which is the pain, the suffering, the stories, we don't realize that we are trying to be normal in a world that we have encased ourselves in pain and stories. And so, but because most people are capable of at least functioning at a surface level, they are not aware of all the resources they're not tapped into, because they're functioning at an intellectual level.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
That's only one dimension. When you only function here, you're missing this whole other full body, universal beauty and power and strength that gets interrupted. And the resistance comes from, I actually think most of it is just ignorance, Paul. Just ignorance, that they don't realize that this stuff is interrupting their life.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, and there's so many misunderstandings about it. And you point out some of them in the book, like about boundaries. You know, you say it's important to acknowledge that forgiving someone does not require you to be around them. Now, yeah. I interviewed an author who wrote a book on forgiveness, I don't know, a few months ago. But hers was she was a trauma survivor and basically was writing it on behalf of people that had like a bona fide trauma. I mean, trauma is a word that's just tossed around all over the place now. But I mean, and she was making the point that don't feel obligated to forgive before you're ready to forgive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that can reinforce the trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you can feel guilty about not, you know.
And sometimes religion does that.
Yeah,
sometimes
that's right.
Religion prompts someone to feel obligated for some religious point of view to practice forgiveness, and it's basically a spiritual bypass.
Right.
So there is an order in which this happens most health you know, in the healthiest way, for mm-hmm. sure. And yeah.
You explain how forgiveness reorganizes consciousness. You call it a spiritual technology. Can you speak to that, how it does that?
Yeah, and it actually goes back to the metaphor about collecting garbage in your house, that when this clearing happens, so before the clearing happens, before you clear these things out of your psyche and out of your, because it also lands in the body temple, right? Pain lands, we know this now, this is no longer just an idea. We know that pain lands in the body and that we're having a whole somatic experience, right? And so what happens is, as we begin to heal, our view of the world opens up more because we become more available to it. When I'm not guarded, I can see things that I couldn't have seen before. I allow for flow, energetic flow, emotional flow. I allow for ease of relationships. And I'm less, once we do the work, we don't attract the same people into our lives.
Right.
So we're suddenly surrounded by a more loving boundary of people. So yeah, our psyche becomes more in tune with our perfection because
right.
we've cleared the vessel. See, you mm-hmm. and I are the vessel through which universe, spirit, whatever, you're right, God passes. But when we are holding on to all that stuff, spirit's kind of trying to get through the weeds of that stuff.
Right, right. It's a lot of static.
Yes, and when we learn to breathe easy, When I learned that I don't have to relive the pain, that suffering is optional, which is a big conversation, but pain is part of life, but suffering is our resubscription.
That's right.
You know, and so when I do this, I exit that suffering and I leave that behind. Yeah.
One of the techniques that you teach, and I want to make sure we get to it before we run out of time, is the mind shifting technique.
Which
it seems to me it's derivative of Ernest Holmes' scientific prayer.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think it's a fantastic, I've used it most of my adult life, although I haven't used it in a long time. I'm going to go back to it now that I read your book, but let's explain for the audience what mind shifting, it's a process, it's called a treatment. How does it work?
Yes. So you can call it a spiritual mind treatment, an affirmative prayer, but mind shifting is all is recognizing that my life is the result of my thinking feeling combination. But when I mindfully speak my word in a very powerful, focused way, what happens? That begins to impact my attention. And then my attention, if I stay fruitful with it and keep feeding it, then my attention attracts to me things in the world that demonstrate that which I'm looking to demonstrate. So then one of the mind shifts in the book might be that the willingness to be healed, the willingness to be whole, the willingness to take responsibility, but only what's mine. And so that begins to call the attention, and then that filters into us. And then because that becomes part of our makeup, we draw in from life. We draw in from, all of life to demonstrate that in our lives. It's a beautiful, my mind shifts in the book are one of my favorite things in the book because.
Yeah, me too.
I
copied a couple of them. I'm going to improvise on it, but I thought that's a really great the way that you're teaching people how to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to miss out on the topic of non-judgment and its relationship to forgiveness.
You. Yes.
So why is non-judgment so important to the process?
Do you have 3 hours? No.
We got 3 minutes.
So in non-judgment, and it is difficult because if I'm too reductive here, I might miss the point. However, we only have to forgive someone for something once we judge them.
Right.
Now, I was abused. So, of course, there's going to be a judgment and there's going to be agreement about that. But I'm referring to when if I spend time, and we all do it. We all do it, right? But if I spend time judging you for the way you did this podcast and judging that person for the way they parked their car or the way they drove or then what happens is I'm creating in me this negative gathering of energy that is not in favor for me. And then a lot of that stuff later on becomes something I have to practice forgiveness for. And when I work, when someone signs up for my classes, they get pre-work for me for 2 to 3 weeks prior to the class, watching their mind and watching their practice of judgment. And it's not because I want to judge their judgment, but what I'm trying to prove and show them is that I want them to see where their mind is focused. Because a mind that's focused on judgment, and now scientifically proven on complaining, on gossip, then this is not a mind focused on healing or on self-love. And it is a very confused mind, and it is a very rigid mind. So the practice of non-judgment, and I'll teach one quick tool, is that if you want to start learning how to practice non-judgment, the next time a judgment starts to come up inside, you just think to yourself, it's not good, it's not bad, it just is.
That's beautiful. You know, we just about run out of time, and I want to tie this last point you made here in with, judgment is also something we direct towards ourselves. They call it the inner critic, and you make a big point, and you kind of end the book with this point. Forgiveness is an inside job, and it begins with forgiving yourself.
Yeah.
And Michelle, I wish we had a lot more time because there's so much that I wanted to talk to you about. Maybe we'll have to do this again, but thank you so much. For being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is simplyyourname.com, michellewadleig.com. That's Michelle with two L's, WADLEIGH.com. And for those who may be listening to Pathways Live on a Sunday morning and tuned in late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, producer of the Visionary I Ching Oracle, an app that supports great decisions and perfect timing. And we're so glad you are with us today. Please note that you have the ability to review hundreds of interviews in our online archive at divination.com. And you can play or share this program whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today we've been visiting with Dr. Michelle Wadley, author of Forgiveness, a Workbook for Emotional and Spiritual Freedom. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is currently broadcast on KBOO FM in Portland, Oregon. And you can get a free subscription to our podcast, which you can find at divination.com. That's DIVINATION.com, or by searching Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel, where you can also give us a thumbs up and subscribe. So feel free to forward a link to your friends. And one more word about the fact that here at KBOO Community Radio, we want to assure our listeners that despite losing federal public grant money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, we will continue to unapologetically represent the voices of our community. With the loss of $110,000 in federal funding, we're counting on supporters like you to help make up the difference so KBOO can continue our important mission in these difficult and unpredictable times. To help keep independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio on the air, just go to kboo.fm/give on the internet, and we thank you for your support. And this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Michelle Wadley and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways Conversation.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations.